Hello, everybody. Welcome to Disturbed, a podcast about true crime, disturbing stuff, like the title says. And for the second time only, I am not alone. Meet my friend.
Hi, introduce yourself. As well. Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mean to cut you off.
It is all good.
He's wanted to do the podcast for a while, and I was interested, so I don't know how active I'll be, but I'll enjoy it.
All right. What would you like to be known as?
B.
Doodles? All right.
Yes.
Doodles, B. I don't know which one. I might go to B because it's easier to say, but I might do Doodles, too. I don't know.
Makes sense.
Whatever. Thank you. And if I accidentally say your real name, I'll, like, cut it in edit. So if you see, if there's, like, any weird cuts.
Bro, I just introduced myself as my real name because I didn't know. But it's chill.
Did you?
Yeah.
You can go by your real name.
I prefer B.
B? Alright. Well, if you're new to the podcast, hi. I'm your normal host, Justin. Normally I am alone, but I'm hoping to not do that.
You're so eloquent.
I am a poet. I am Homer himself. And I don't mean from The Simpsons, I mean the writer of The Odyssey.
So that was fun.
Are my earbuds connected?
I don't know. I can hear you.
My earbud isn't connected.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know what happened just then.
Me neither. Hopefully. Yeah, it's not gonna put my earbuds. So I'm gonna put my earbuds away. But yeah. Hopefully, editing me is gonna kinda maybe thank myself for that, because that was actually perfectly after the introduction. We were wrapping up the introduction when it kicked you, so
great. At least it was a convenient time.
So yeah, I can, like, add intro music without it going throughout the whole podcast.
Oh, bet.
Anyway. Today's topic is a topic that I've known about for a few years. I said since like sixth grade. B, you can attone to this. I have not told you anything about this. This is completely new to you, unless you know it from prior research on your own.
I tried to get him to tell me and he refused.
I wanted to be a surprise. I gave multiple hints, though.
Yeah, and I still wasn't able to piece it together, so it seems like I'll still be surprised by whatever story it is.
And if not, it'll be an in-depth story, and at least maybe some of the listeners won't know about it, and we can give both of our own details and things that we remember about it. So, even if it isn't a surprise, it's still good.
True. Silver linings to everything.
Silver linings everywhere. So, today's podcast is about a little girl who the American foster care system just kind of basically tortured in a way. Well, led to her torture. It is the prolonged torture, kind of. It wasn't like they were trying to torture her, but I'll get into that later. It was the accidental, quote-unquote, torture of Candace Elizabeth Newmaker. Does that name ring a bell at all?
I'm trying to recall, but I'm not getting anything, so I guess this one has slipped under my radar.
All right. So let's start where I started. And this is, one of the clues I gave to B was, I got this from a game theory episode, MatPat. So here's where that comes in. This is how I found out about this case. There is a YouTube channel known as Petscop, where a man plays a lost PS1 game called Petscop, and it gets scary and found, like, horror and stuff.
I watched that episode. I know what episode you're talking about, Game Theory, and I just, like, mm-hmm. dropped it halfway through. So if I kept watching, I probably could have had some more, like, prior knowledge.
Yeah. it's a theory on Petscop, because the whole thing is, the story of Petscop is trying to tell the story of Candace Elizabeth Newmaker. And he briefly focused on it, and the case fascinated me, and it stuck with me because it was my first big, like, messed up true crime case, and it just fascinated me, horrified me, it made me feel sick. Like, I felt emotionally unwell after reading this one, but because I wasn't the hardened veteran that I am now.
Drama.
All right. Trauma, yes.
It just casually, like, desensitizes yourself.
Casually watches too many gore videos.
Yeah.
I actually just recently watched one.
Bro?
Like, yesterday, yeah. It's a new one. It's the Mrs. Pac-Man video, if you've seen that.
Oh, no, I haven't. It might have come up when I recommended, but I don't think I had sat down and watched it yet.
Hmm. It's this video that it's a woman who, I don't know what, I don't know the story behind it, but it's, like, it's one of the worst I've seen. But it's, like, she gets her head, like, chopped right in her face with, like, an axe. All the way to, like, half the back. It's,
That is disturbing. Name dropping.
Yes.
Almost, like, half name dropping. Like, close enough.
Close enough. Roll credits.
Yeah. Podcast over.
Podcast out, yeah. Yeah, and it's so bad because you can, like, she's still alive.
How?
You can see, like, yeah. You can see, like, inside, like,
her body is terrifying.
Yeah. You can, but it's like, her eyes are still moving, and you can see it, like, the cut moving as she breathed. Anyway. I'm gonna not talk about that now, because I don't know your stance on most disturbing things. Really, okay. I don't know where you draw the line.
I don't really mind.
Alright.
But yeah.
So? Yeah. I didn't want to... On to Miss Newmaker. So, also, this, even though this whole podcast has a big content warning on it, this does deal with children murders, specifically. So, a child's murder. So, if you do not like that, that is a content warning. If you are, this isn't, like, an adult. This is a child. All right. We all good to start?
I'm down.
All right. All right, let me see here. So this starts with a woman named Angela Elmore. You see, this woman, Angela Elmore, she grew up in and out of foster care. And like her whole family before her had been in and out of foster care. And she wanted to prove that she could be a family. She could create a family, because the whole family at this point in her life has been like, you're going to have a kid and they're going to go into foster care. It's like a curse at this point. And Angela didn't want that. So she wanted to create a family. At 17, she marries Todd Elmore. Well, Angela's birth name wasn't Elmore, by the way. Her name is Angela Elmore. I couldn't find her birth name. But she marries Todd Elmore and becomes Angela Elmore. In to leave her mother, who also had a similar foster home upbringing. Todd was 23 at the time. That is sketchamundo. Not even the Romeo and Juliet laws will allow that.
Yeah, when you said, like, 17, I was like, oh, so he'll also be young, because, like, sometimes people got married earlier back then. Nope.
No, just, 23.
That's just a little icky.
Icky? Like,
I feel like that's not even close to the worst thing that's going to happen by any means, but, like, just wanted to point that out.
No, that's just the start. There's, like, after, like, a good few minutes, they're going to be gone and not heard of until, like, the end, so...
Tasty.
By the way, feel free to cut me off at any point if you want to, like, point something out, by the way, because with how call works, like, a lot of times if you want to say something and you interject when I've paused, by the time I hear you interject, I've already started over on the next thing. So don't feel bad if
okay.
I think you're saying makes sense. I don't know. Just don't feel bad. Just don't feel bad if this happens.
Heard.
Yep. And also, anyone watching, we're not intentionally cutting each other off. We're not, like, battling for listenership.
We are.
Cut.
We talked about it beforehand. This is a show of dominance. We're literally just fighting.
Yeah.
On to Miss Newmaker.
I was trying to come up with some joke, but I couldn't think of something.
Can I be honest?
Be honest.
Since I know the case is about child torture, I keep thinking about one audio that's like, child murder isn't funny. It is if you say it this way, child morta.
I've never heard of that, but I love it.
Oh, I'll send it to you eventually. You'll hear it eventually.
All right. There's nothing worse than a rapist. Boom. A child. No.
Oh, God. I feel so bad because, like, this is a child that got tortured and we're laughing about it. This is terrible.
No, you know what? We're trying to talk about true crime and disturbing stuff. We need to joke or else this whole podcast is just depressing.
That's fair. I say this with utmost respect to Miss Newmaker, by the way. Anything that I say. Yes.
Yes, Candace Newmaker, all of our victims and anything like that, we don't victim blame. Well, I don't try to victim blame at all. I will see who I put blame on, sure, but I won't most of the time it's not the victim. If anything, it'll be like, the victim did do this, but, like, I'll always refer back to how the killer was in the wrong at this point.
Let's go with because the bare they always minimum. Are. I'm joking.
Let's go with... Yeah. Alright. So, Not surprisingly, Angela did not love Todd. Not really. He was a violent man with a history of petty crimes, which continued during their marriage. So, this is where, at this point in the marriage, Angela, in November 19th, 1989, in Lincolnton, North.
Jeez.
All right, we're back. My earbuds disconnected again.
Bro, why can't it just be smooth sailing?
It didn't connect to my earbud again. Wait. I tried disconnecting it this time. Why didn't it work? Sorry. I have, of course, Galaxy Buds. So, with how my earbuds work, like, if I don't close the case, they stay connected weirdly. Anyway, don't worry, I'll cut that out in post.
I don't know why it keeps cutting me out.
It might be my internet. My internet's pretty, but I don't know.
I don't either.
I'm not like doing anything besides the recording. I just have, like, the recording up on my phone.
Yeah. Same.
All right. So, November 19th, 1989. Nine months prior to that date, sorry. So, November. So, November's 11, so 9 prior, that's 2. So, in February of 1989, Angela and Todd, even though Todd, you know, kind of being a criminal, they decide to further their engagement and solidify it a little bit more with a child. So,
always a good move.
Always a good move. November 19th, 1989, in Lincolnton, North Carolina, Candace Tiara Elmore is born. And this is where it breaks what I've previously researched, because what I heard, what I saw was that Todd and Angela both loved Candace. Todd and Angela were not terrible parents. They did have their own squabbles with themselves, but they both were united through their love with Candace. However, in 1991 and 1992, her sister Chelsea and Michael, respectively, were born as well. Her sister Chelsea and her brother Michael were born. Candace's sisters and brothers. Wow, sorry. And Angela started struggling with multiple jobs to pay for the things the children needed. But they always gave them what they needed. But while Angela was stretched thin between multiple jobs and trying to go to school to get a PhD, to get a better job, Todd just simply couldn't hold a job, and he always was lying about where he was going and what he was doing.
Kill him.
Yeah. And Todd just ended up just heading to a pawn shop and just pawning many items, including Candace's high chair and Angela's wedding ring. But regardless, the three kids had food, you know, and were clothed in a home and were loved. And yes, we should kill him.
Glad you concur.
Yes. And to showcase why, police often were made to respond to domestic disputes, resulting in Todd being charged with assault against Angela. These were dropped because Angela couldn't get to court on time. Every single time, because she was at so many different jobs.
Yeah, I feel like that's a failing on the justice system as well.
Mm-hmm. But, thankfully, in 1992, Angela and her children left Todd and went to a woman's shelter. At this point, Candace turned 3. Candace was 3, Chelsea was around 2, and Michael was around 1 at the time. So in my mind, anything talking about her childhood above the age of 3 until the events that I'm going to talk about now happens in this woman's shelter. I'm not sure about that.
That's her.
Yeah.
I mean, it is hard to get information about some specifics anyway, so I mean, it's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah. So if you find differently, don't hesitate to tell it in the comments.
Send a threatening letter to his house telling him exactly what he did wrong.
Oh yeah, my address is 4142. No, I'm kidding. So woman's shelter. Woman's shelter. Oh, by the way, I also have lived in a woman's shelter before. Just gonna point that out, so I know how that feels.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't live there because it was my mom, and I didn't live with my mom. I lived with my dad and visited my mom on the weekends. But there was a big time where my mom and my little brother lived in a woman's shelter because of my mom and her decisions on men.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Which that man stayed with her for like 10 years, 13 years. I say 12, 11 years. Not good.
He stayed with her for years. That's
years, multiple years. I'd say around 10.
Around 10, no.
10 or 11, yeah.
I can't relate to that, but if later it comes up that the children had to lie to a protective service, I can relate.
I don't know if they had to, but you'll soon figure out that if they did, they pretty much failed. And what's crazy is the only time my mom got out of it was when he decided that he didn't like her anymore. Like, he didn't want her anymore. He literally packed her bags and she finally decided to leave him. Which I'm not victim blaming there either. I'm just saying, like, yeah. It's really easy to sit here and be like, why didn't she leave him? But I know it's hard.
My mom had to really worry about leaving because we don't know what he was saying to her. It could really easily been like, if you leave, I'll hurt you or I'll hurt your kid or something like that. So it's a really hard decision.
Yeah. The only thing, I don't blame my mom for all that. The only thing I blame her for is she got with another one with the exact same signs, which you still can't blame someone for that either, because psychology and all that, it's what you think love is at this point. You've spent 10 years with a guy who treated you like that.
Yeah. It's still
I don't know. Yeah, it's still shady, but I don't know. I'm not a female, and I haven't really done anything with love, so I can't account for how love makes you feel.
That's fair.
Yep. So that controversial topic aside,
on to Missy Maker. That's gonna be the only segue in the entire episode.
That controversial topic aside. Back to New Maker.
Back to New Maker.
So, even from an early age, Candace was known to have a temper. She was used to protect, at least like at that point, she was used to like Angela and Todd fighting, her having to protect Angela at this point. Candace was the one, like, it says like the kids would try to, like, the 2-year-old and the 3-year-old, Candace and her younger sister, I'm guessing, it said that her siblings and her would all try and protect Angela, which, in at this point, like her little brother's not even born yet, so either not born yet or is like just been born, so I'm guessing it's Candace and Chelsea, her sister, but they would try to protect Angela. But Candace was the one that just socks Todd in like the face. Like, she's the one that always hit him.
As she should.
He's the one that, yes, as she should. She was the one that just like physically fought him. Of course, he didn't hit back, but.
Girl boss.
Girl boss. Now, it is important to note that Angela was this way as well. Angela was also had a temper and also was like this, which, though Todd was a jerk, Angela also, like, there was that whole back and forth where both of them kind of started it, but yeah. Angela, Todd would always take it too far, and Angela had a proper, like, psychological reason to be, always have this temper, because she also endured abuse from multiple foster families as a kid, so much so that the state of North Carolina, I think, labeled her as mentally ill.
Oh, fun. And back then, being mentally ill was, like, bigger.
Yeah.
The fact that the state stepped in didn't do that. Fun.
Yeah. Like, well, I don't know if the state did it, but she's officially labeled mentally ill in the state. I don't know how, but she was labeled mentally ill. Due to this, her, Todd, and the kids had social services attention all the time. And when they found out about all this, the kids were taken from Angela.
That's why we lied to them, because we didn't want to be taken.
Yeah, that's now why kids, you would lie to them.
Now, kids, listen, if you're in that situation, you can be honest to a point. It can be helpful.
To a point. It can be.
Like, to a point, because, like, the whole getting taken away from your parents thing does kind of suck, so, count your battles.
Just kind of.
Yeah.
Actually, there's another thing. There was a, YouTuber called Indigo Mystic, if you've heard of her. She would do these vlogs, and you can tell she was, like, kind of narcissistic and kind of, like, all that, but she was a mother who was homeless, kind of. And Well, she lived in a place like with her friends for like 3 years,
Yeah.
but they had an agreement that when someone came to take the house, because it was a house they were selling, that I think her name was Rebecca. I think her name was Rebecca. Indigo Mystic's real name was Rebecca. But Rebecca would have to go. And she had two daughters as well. But Rebecca would have to go. She was a single mother too. Her and her husband had passed away. Not passed away. They had divorced. Jesus.
Yeah, her and her husband dead, and she was a single mother.
She was a single mother. She's still alive and dead at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Like, unfortunately, it was fatal, but she survived, so.
Yeah, they put her in a box, so technically, since you couldn't see it, she could be both dead and alive.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, Schrodinger's mother. That. Not his mother, but like, yeah.
Yeah, Schrodinger's mystic.
Yeah, Schrodinger's mystic.
Yes, but she got kicked out though, and she was angry at the court. So, like, she went through house to house to house, and at the final house she ever really stayed at, they had a huge altercation, which got the police called.
Ooh.
And there are, you can see the, like, there are re-uploads of the videos. Like, with all of these fights, she didn't train her kids to, like, get away from it. She trained her two daughters to grab a phone and record it so they can put it on YouTube.
Oh.
And they were all on YouTube until, like, one of the daughters decided, we're not gonna keep these up because they just make people just keep telling us that our mom is a nut job. But she kind of was. She kind of was, like, she would always instigate it.
Yeah, that is a little nut job-ish behavior, so.
Kind of. Like, it's hard to, it's always hard with these because she seems to be the victim and she always puts it out as the victim, but it's really hard to be like, actually, she was in a very bad place, but she also, like, she just.
You can, there can be nuance. You can be a victim and you can also, like, make questionable choices. So if she could be in a bad place mentally, she could be, like, a victim of the system, but she could still do bad things.
Yeah, like, and it was a lot of, like, biting the hand that fed you kind of thing. She would always, like, talk, she would always, like, get fights with the people that were allowing her to kind of, like, crash on their couch for a bit.
Yeah.
And then, like, she would get mad that they were kicking her out because, yeah.
Yeah.
And she was also mad at the court because the court made her get out of that house that she lived in for like 3 years.
That's.
Yeah.
I love how there's just been like a mini segment about her.
Yeah. And because I just heard these stories. Turns out the court wanted, like, her, the adoptive father, not the adoptive father, sorry, the actual father of her daughters, like, didn't want his daughters with her because obviously that situation's not good. And she is, the mystic Rebecca is constantly, like, always constantly doing these fights, and it's like a toxic environment for the daughters. So he goes to court to take the daughters away, which Rebecca, of course, makes a whole statement about it. She just stands outside of the courtroom and, like, refuses to go inside. So the court proceeds without her, and she loses.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so she ran off with, like, her and the daughters just disappeared. And she went and stayed with another friend. And I don't know if that friend's, like, the house that she was in at the time or not. But She ended up in another house where another altercation happened between family members there, and she apparently decided to instigate, got completely in the way in the middle of it. And of course, this caused them to start turning on her. She, of course, told her kids to film it. You can find the video. And the daughters filmed it. And they also, like, in every time this fight happens, it is so disturbing. Basically, you can hear the daughters, like, just screaming and saying they're scared and saying they don't want to be homeless again. It is so, I'm so sad for those daughters.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. They go up to their room, and the police are threatened to be called to because they want Rebecca out of the house again, and the police are called to remove her. And there's a thing, an object that has been named Betty, that Rebecca has shown on her channel. When the police come, she greets the police with Betty. And Betty just happens to have a barrel and a trigger. She fired on the police multiple times, killing a police officer. Rest in peace, her. God rest her soul. And Rebecca was also shot and killed. And what's even worse about this is the daughters were filming at the time.
Jeez.
They were in their room, and they ran out to try and, like, intervene and stop the fight again, because I think they heard the police outside. And they're running down the hallway, and with how this house is laid out, there's a, like, upstairs there's a banister, and then you go down the stairs, there's the front door, and you go down the stairs again to get to, like, the lower part of the house.
Yeah.
So the daughters reach the banister where the front door is in full view right as the shots go out. So they see their mom die. It's right outside of camera, but you can hear her, you can hear Rebecca say, "Shoot me, shoot me." And then pop, 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 pop. And you can hear them screaming. And I could handle it if it was just like a videotaping of, like, Rebecca dying. I could handle that, but having the daughters scream and run off crying about them being utterly terrified.
It's just situations like that really suck, because it's obvious that it's someone wanting to die. It really shows it was, like, a marked helplessness.
That, and it's like, at that point, Rebecca was, like, because she had that kind of thought of most, like, Southern country men have, and most, like, Southern, like those Southern, like, house, like, couch surfing mothers have. It's a weird thing, and it's a niche that I've been, like, I've seen before, but it's like that kind of, like, hardened soul type of mother where she got the gun because she wanted to fight the court. That's why she had the gun. That's why she bought it. She bought it to intimidate and threaten the court system that tried to take her kids away. And at this point, it was like either A, she felt helpless because the gig was up at this point. If the police come, then they're going to ID her and the kids are going to be taken anyway. And either that, or it's like she was like, okay, because at the point when they said, "I'll call the police," she said, "Go ahead, call them," which mean, maybe she was just like, this is my final stand.
Yeah.
Maybe she felt like the world's out to get her. This is her final stand. She's finally gonna stand up to the bullies
Yeah.
that keep trying to take her kids away. I don't know, but it was the worst thing I've ever, like, one of the worst I've seen. And I've seen so many bad things, and it's just, oh.
That is rough. It's not like just some like disconnected gore, disconnected like angst or anything. You can see it's someone, the death of someone that really impacts the people around her.
And
That is.
when I watch stuff like that, it's like it's always the sound that gets me. It's never the imagery. Like, I can sit there and just watch it and be like, oh, cool, sick. Her head's not on anymore. But it's like it's hearing people screaming at the sight, or hearing like the person like still alive and like trying to breathe or crying out for help or something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's not in the exact same vein, but like that's how it was with Dying Light when I played it. I can stand all the spooky like imagery, but it's the sound design. There's something so different about seeing something versus hearing it.
Yeah, and it's anyway,
Anyway, Optimus
we can
New
do Optimus New Maker.
Year.
Angela disputed her kids being taken, but the judges just said that Candace's outbursts were caused by being around Angela, like mother, like daughter. I think is what the I think is a direct quote. Officials never explained why the kids were removed in the first place, but they terminated parental rights and forced the kids into foster care.
Not fun at all.
Yeah, not really. Now we're gonna meet someone who I, at first, when I heard this story, I went into this thinking it's her fault. It's all her fault. But my this just changed my opinion just slightly. We have Jean Newmaker, came from a small town, but her grandparents owned a mansion. The family was well known. She was from a rich family. She was described as busy and bossy, but she wasn't snobbish. She wasn't like, "Ugh, I'm so better than you because I'm rich." She wasn't like that.
I love how the hint of a posh British accent poked through.
Yeah, love that. She wasn't, in D&D terms, she wasn't a high elf.
Nice.
She achieved a master's degree in nursing and went on to be a pediatric nurse practitioner with a drive to become a single mother by the age of 40.
Got the funny dude
And
in place. More than 5 years, but yeah.
on June 14th, 1996, Candace Tiara Elmore was renamed Candace Elizabeth Newmaker and brought to her new 5-bedroom house with a large lawn in Durham, North Carolina.
Where'd they change your middle?
And,
Why'd they change your middle name?
I have no clue.
I mean, I was gonna say, right after I asked it, I mean, obviously you wouldn't know, but like, I get changing the last name when you adopt someone, but.
Maybe it's like middle name, it has like some kind of importance, like, but it's not, it's like the parents came up with the middle name, but it's not as influential as their first name, so it's easier to change it to like kind of break them off from the old parents more.
True. Yeah. Just though it's a choice, that's for sure.
And I didn't mean to make that sound like I don't like your old parents. I don't know. I'm not saying that. I mean, it's like you don't want them to have to the kid to have to keep having that name have such a bad representation, I guess, in their life. They're like, that's my old parents. That's my old trauma is connected to the middle name. I don't know.
I get that.
But yeah. Yeah. But back to Newmaker. No, okay. Back to MTV. No, okay. So
Going back to somewhere.
back to somewhere. Gene took 2 months off to ensure a smooth transition for Candace, who was sent to the top school in her district. And I first thought this all happened because Jean was a bad mother, and but researching like all the stuff Jean tried for Candace, it just as this went forward, it kind of took my mind. In school, Candace did have noticeable anger issues at times, blowing up at the other kids, for example. But she was apparently easy to love, a delight to have in class. And these anger outbursts were kind of, I guess, not all the time. They were like they would happen, but they weren't frequent. She was said to not have really any bad behavioral issues, but she didn't forget her old family. In class, for example, she designed a poster about her life and included her siblings she left behind, which caused her to be bullied in class for being adopted or lying about having siblings.
I hate kids, fun fact,
Yeah.
because like you shouldn't expect someone to just like forget about their old life the moment they're adopted. And the fact that the kids in her class made her feel crappy for situations that she could not control in her life.
It's bad. Just wait, I have a whole section known as Tears Time in the next page on my notebook here, so.
Great.
But Jean, Jean made sure Candace could do whatever she wanted, signing her up for activities and letting Candace spend time with her friends. So Jean was like very supportive of whatever Candace really wanted to do. But like a child her age, she didn't really show much affection to her teachers. She was fairly mischievous, but still she often amazed everyone by how mature she acted around teachers and adults. She did, however, show high levels of compassion and empathy for the students around her. Now, here's where I put Tears Time. Candace was noted to play with a girl 2 years younger than her, often acting as more of like a mentor. On one occasion, Candace told the girl that the girl was lucky to be in a family that loved her. When the younger girl needed further clarification, Candace explained she had been adopted and the girl had been born from her mother's heart because her mother had wanted her, and that sometimes, quote, mamas don't want their children. Yeah, we'll have to ponder that line. Like, I quoted that, and I it almost made me cry. And like, guys, keep in mind, I know B from high school. So like, I was sitting in the same class as her as I was doing all this research. So like, I was just behind you, just like trying not to sob as I was writing this down. Yeah.
I'm glad that I was completely unaware.
It was bad. But this well behavior did not continue at home for Candace. Jean had hoped she could provide a stable home for Candace, but Candace wouldn't look Jean in the eye. Candace wouldn't allow Jean to hold her. Candace wouldn't allow affection of any kind, really, from Jean. And her behavior was just even described as assaultive. Jean took Candace to various specialists, like ADD and PTSD specialists, which did not help. Jean felt that this made it even worse, saying that Candace would play with matches and even in one occurrence killed a goldfish. So, let's take a small bit of a break to talk about another character in this screwed up novella. I couldn't find much about him, but William Goebel is a therapist that works from Fayetteville, North Carolina nowadays. He still, after all this, is still working as a therapist, that doesn't really matter though. What does is that in 1999, he was in Virginia doing a conference on reactive attachment disorder. Yes, so the initials may suggest it. Reactive attachment disorder is not rad.
Maybe with that attitude.
That was meant to be a pun, but I think I delivered it terribly.
Oh no, I got it. I just didn't react.
So you don't have reactive attachment disorder?
I don't, actually. I was going to say I'm too rad for that, but that actually goes completely against the acronym for the disorder.
Yeah. So you're not that rad?
Not that rad.
Well, if it even is a thing, because I think he made it up.
What?
He made it a thing, because he's one of the only well, no, he's not. I'm lying. Wait. He was, like, the top specialist on this thing. And it's still being treated today, but how they treat RAD is barbaric, and I'm gonna get into that later. But essentially, reactive attachment disorder is when a child does not form a secure bond with their parents or caretakers. It is shown by the child seeming to fear the caretaker, even in loving situations. It is caused when children between 9 months to 5 years experience multiple traumas in their life. Chances of getting RAD increase when the child is taken away from a parent or guardian they had a previous healthy relation with. Though the previous relation wasn't really that healthy in Candace's case, in her mind it was. RAD leads to struggles with social connections later in life and having problems controlling their emotions. After this presentation, Mr. Goebel did this presentation, and in 1999 and afterwards, a woman came up to him. This woman was begging for her help. She traveled from North Carolina all the way to Virginia just to speak to him.
Wow.
Goebel refers to her to a Dr. Connell Watkins, who specialized in attachment therapy, after he diagnosed her daughter with severe reactive attachment disorder. Yeah. So, April of 2000, Jean and Candace, who's now 10, traveled to Evergreen, Colorado, to the house of Connell Watkins, Dr. Connell Watkins, in Evergreen, Colorado, to help Candace with intensive therapy, promising to strengthen their bond and help Candace's anger in 2 weeks for a low, low price of $7,000.
Nice, that is completely manageable and also reasonable.
Reasonable. If you haven't guessed, the young woman who talked to Goebel was Jean Newmaker. The sessions would be conducted by Connell Watkins and Julie Ponder, as well as the therapeutic foster parents, quote, all over that, Britta St. Clair and Jack McDaniel. Jean assisted whenever needed. So, here's what I've seen, gotten from I don't know if this is at the time or if this is now I put this. I think at the time, Connell Watkins was 47. At the time, Julia Ponders was 32. Britta St. Clair at the time was 35. And as of December 19th, 1999, she had written a book called 99 Ways to Drive Your Child Sane. And was a business manager. Jack McDaniels was 41 and at the time was working as an intern to Dr. Connell Watkins, I'm pretty sure. These sessions were known as attachment therapy, which included rage reduction, rebirthing, compression therapy, coercive restraint therapy.
Sounds destructive from a mental standpoint.
Oh yeah, let me tell you all about it. The child is restrained with the goal of causing rage or despair until the child breaks and is sent into an, quote, infantile state, where they can be easily reparented by being cradled, bottle fed, or forced to maintain eye contact.
That is torture. Yeah, it's torture.
That is literally martyrs. Like, you are literally torturing somebody until they come in contact with God or their parents at this point.
That is terrible. I can't imagine ever doing that to someone in good conscience and labeling it as a fool. Like, you have to be
a
head to do that to someone.
Yeah. And that's also why I said kind of changed my opinion on Jean. So, in this therapy, as you can probably guess, the goal is to control the child and teach obedience, since an attached person should always comply to a parent's demands.
Yeah.
That's how parents work. That's how parents work.
Yeah.
Guys.
That's why, like, with aliens and robots, like, the controlling center is called the mothership.
Yeah?
It's supposed to be a robotic, follower to your parent.
Yeah.
That's gross.
It is very gross. Now, if anyone knows anything about therapy or anything like that, this is not what is known as attachment theory or attachment-based therapy, where therapists focus on mistrust in a family to recuperate a bond in said family, mainly used with teen depression and or suicidal ideation, helping both the child and parents learn where they are overstepping the boundary, not just torturing the already troubled kid into being submissive to the parent's overbearing dominance. But this attachment therapy, the terrible one, was investigated by the APSAC, the American Professional Society of Abusive Children. They found measures such as aversive tickling, punishment by restriction to food and water and the restroom, barring any social interaction outside the family, and of course, encouraging the regression to an infant state.
That is literally abusive.
It is.
It is so frustrating that this could happen to an innocent kid.
They literally, first of all, aversive tickling.
Yeah.
They would just, like, tickle them until they got, like, ticked off about it. That, and punishment by not giving them food or water or allowing them to use the restroom.
Dude. Okay.
So, on April 10th, Candace Newmaker began therapy with Dr. John Alston. Dr. John Alston operates in Evergreen, Colorado now. He went to Tulane University School of Medicine. Candace's meds to regulate mood would change multiple times over the two-week period. She would be given meds. She also ceased to take meds for depression and ADD like she had been doing before therapy. These meds were given to her on a daily schedule by her foster father in the home they were staying in, which was Jack McDaniel. And Candace was forced to call this man Daddy Jack.
Come on, man. Daddy Jack.
You don't just call someone daddy. Like, I don't even call my dad daddy. Like, I don't.
Yeah, but in their defense, it wasn't as, like, weird back then.
Yeah. But, Jack McDaniel was paid $700 to write a report on Candace's progress for a therapist. Jack had no medical training. Like I said, he was a intern at the time. He reported Candace as entirely gone after taking these meds. Like, just out of it. Completely numb. In the first week of therapy...
Sorry.
Oh yeah, no. I hate him too. These guys are absolutely terrible. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way.
Oh, no, you're good.
In the first week of therapy, the team felt they had a breakthrough. Candace had undergone a 3-hour session where she had been wrapped up in a sheet with her head exposed, and Jean had laid across her to form a cross. And you can look up a pic of Jean right now as you're listening to this. She isn't skinny at all. Not fat shaming the woman, but she was definitely hefty. And the only reason I say that is because she was forced to lay on top of a 10-year-old, for 3 hours.
No, she wasn't forced. She was the adult in the situation. She had the ability to say no to that. So that was still a choice. At that point, it was still a choice for her to do that.
Yeah. I shouldn't have said forced. I should have said paid $7,000 to lay on top of her child. After the 3 hours, she was released. Candace was released. And Jean sat in a chair. Candace was then made to crawl to her. Not walk, crawl, and lay in her lap like an infant, and be fed by Jean from a plate. Jean sobbed uncontrollably, finally being allowed by Candace to hold her. Candace was finally able, she was finally allowing Jean to hold her. This is where it gets, April 19th, the next stage of therapy begins. Rebirth. Candace was notably tired and had been suffering from nightmares where her birth mother was killing her by dropping her out of a window. And of
That's
course,
a healthy mental state.
very healthy indeed. The therapist used this against her. I think this is Connell at this point, Miss Watkins. The therapist used this against her, saying that Jean would never do such a thing and asking if Candace would like to be reborn to her. And of course, Candace agrees. So they do rebirth therapy, which includes Candace being tightly wrapped in a sheet. All over, like no nothing out, like her head, everything tightly wrapped in a sheet. She is told she must crawl out of the birth canal to be born to Jean. Another blanket is wrapped around her, covering her head. Sorry, at this point, her head's covered now. They're wrapping her to simulate being in the womb. Connell Watkins sits near Candace's feet. Julie Ponders holds the sheet closed by Candace's head. Jack McDaniel and Britta St. Clair sit on either side of Candace's chest and back. Jean sits by Julie Ponders, waiting for Candace to be born, quote unquote, and is instructed to talk to Candace from the opening in a weird childbirth role play. Then the four adults, a total of 673 pounds, put their weight on top of Candace. Fortunately for Candace, in the trial that that came after this, the whole thing was recorded. And I have written down the transcripts. If there's just like a random thing that's like this is said or this is said, then I don't it, whoever said it was is kind of unclear. Like, or whatever they said is kind of unclear, but the whole gist of it. So.
Hello guys, editor Justin here. So the next part is going to be, it's not going to be a story. Like I said beforehand, this is going to be a transcript of real events that were videotaped of what happened to Miss Newmaker. So this is your last chance, really. This is a big content warning. And I also, to make this as tasteful as possible, I'm gonna try and cut out jokes that any kind of jokes we made that I feel are distasteful, I'm gonna try and cut them out. There was in the middle of it, there was some technical difficulties that I wanted to leave in for humor, but I have decided not to. And I'm also going to stop with the background music. I'm going to stop with cinematics. There's not going to be any background music. It's just going to be the reciting of the transcripts. If you do not want to listen to the transcripts, then I will tell you now that what happens during those transcripts so that you can continue, you can skip the transcript and continue the story as normal. I'm gonna give you guys a slight synopsis that will give you enough information to continue without reading the transcripts, but will give you just enough so that if you want to listen to the transcripts, which I suggest you do if you want the whole story, if you don't think you can take that, that is completely fine. You're not alone. I beg of you, if you do not want to listen to this, don't. If you don't think you can handle it, skip ahead completely. Alright. So what happens in this transcript? Candace is wrapped up in this rebirth therapy, and she is not able to get out, and she slowly suffocates to death. Over an hour. That's what you'll hear in this transcript. If you don't think you're ready to hear that, that is completely fine. Please skip forward. If you think you can handle it, the next few minutes will be musicless, will be cinematicless. I will make sure to cut out the jokes that I plan to keep in. I want to keep this as tasteful as possible for Miss Newmaker. And with that aside, that's all I have for you. Editor Justin is out. Enjoy the story, guys.
At 00 on the video, Julie Ponders tells Candace to lie down on the navy blue flannel sheet and get into the fetal position. Ponders says, quote, "So imagine yourself as a teeny little baby inside your mother's womb and what it felt like. Warm. It felt tight because her stomach was all around you." Ponder twisted the end pillows, and the adults are now lying on top of Candace. 1:25, a minute, 25 seconds. Ponder says, quote, "What do you think you thought about when you were in there?" End quote. Candace says, quote, "I thought I was gonna die." Ponder says, quote, "You thought you were gonna die in there?" Candace, quote, "Yes." Jean says, quote, "I'm so excited. I'm going to have a brand new baby. I hope it's a girl. I'm going to love her, to hold her and tell her stories. I'm going to keep her very safe. Every day we'll be together and she'll be with me forever." End quote. Candace is asked if she believes this. Yes, it is. Candace is asked if she believes this. Candace just says, quote, "Uh-huh." End quote. Candace is asked how this makes her feel. Candace says, quote, "Happy." Watkins says, quote, "If the baby doesn't decide to be born, she will die. When the baby decides to be born, it's a wonderful." Ponder says, quote, "So little baby, are you ready to be reborn?" Candace says, quote, "Uh-huh," end quote. Ponder says, quote, "Come out head first. You have to push really hard with your feet. If you stay in there, you're going to die and your mommy's going to die." At 8:42, 8 minutes, 42 seconds, Candace says, quote, "Who's sitting on me? I can't do it." 8 minutes, 53 seconds, Candace says, quote, "I can't do it." Yelling, I can't raise my voice because I don't live alone, but yelling, "I can't do it," end quote. She is crying at this point. Candace says, quote, "My hands come out first." Watkins says, quote, doesn't answer the question. Watkins just says, "Sometimes it takes 18 hours to be born." At 9 minutes, 36 seconds, Candace starts to scream. Candace says, quote, "I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't breathe. I can't breathe." At 10 minutes, 16 seconds, Candace says, quote, "Whoever is pushing on my head is not helping. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't breathe. It's too dark under here. Please quit pushing on my head. I can't do it. Somebody's sitting on top of me." At 10 minutes, 50 seconds, Candace says, quote, "Somebody's on top of me. Where am I supposed to come out? Right here, where my finger is?" No one answers. 11 minutes, 26 seconds. Candace says, quote, I can't do it. And she screams and says, quote, I'm gonna die. Ponder says, quote, do you want to be reborn or do you want to stay in there and die? 11 minutes, 40 seconds. Candace says, quote, quit pushing on me, please. Quit squishing my legs. I'm gonna die now. Candace screams. And Ponder says, quote, do you want to die? Candace says, quote, no, but I'm about to. At 12 minutes, 10 seconds, Candace says, quote, please, please, I can't breathe. At 12:30, 12 minutes, 30 seconds, Candace says, quote, I can't do it anymore. 10 seconds later, 12 minutes, 40 seconds, Candace says, quote, please quit pushing on me. 13 minutes, 12 seconds, Candace says, quote, I need some help. Help, please. Help me, please. Sorry. Let me restart that because it wasn't factual. I want to keep this as factual as possible because it's the actual transcript. Candace said, quote, I need some help. Help. Help me, please. Watkins says, quote, are you feeling the contractions, Mom? Jean says, quote, I am. And 13 minutes, 43 seconds, Candace says, quote, where am I to go? Right here? Right here? I'm supposed to go right here? Please, please. She screams and says, okay, I'm dying. Okay, I'm dying. I'm sorry. 4 minutes, 31 seconds, 14 minutes, 31 seconds, sorry. Candace says, quote, okay, I'm dying. 14 minutes, 38 seconds. I'm going to die. 15 minutes, 30 seconds. I want to die. 16 minutes, 8 seconds. Candace says, quote, can you let me have some oxygen? You mean like you want me to die for real? Ponder says, quote, uh-huh. Candace says, quote, die right now and go to heaven. Ponder says, quote, go ahead and die right now. For real. For real. Candace says, quote, okay, I'm dead. Watkins says, quote, it's not always easy to live. You have to be really strong to live a life, a human life. Um, 1707, Candace's breathing is labored at this point. And Candace says, quote, get off, I'm sick, get off. Where am I supposed to come out? Where? But how can I get there? But how can I get there? Sorry. Watkins says, quote, just go ahead and die. It's easier. It takes a lot of courage to be born. 18 minutes, 26 seconds. Candace says, you said you would give me oxygen. Watkins said, quote, you got to fight for it. 19 minutes, 50 seconds. At this point, Candace gets sick on herself inside the blanket. And she says, quote, okay, I'm throwing up. I just threw up. And she does it again. Candace says, quote, I gotta poop. I gotta poop. 21 minutes, 24 seconds. Candace says, quote, I'm going in my pants. Ponder says, quote, go ahead. Watkins says, quote, stay in there with the poop and vomit. 23 minutes, 22 seconds. Candace says, quote, help. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. It's hot. I can't breathe. Jean says, quote, I'm so excited to have this baby. I'm waiting for you to love you and hold you. Ponder says, quote, scream, Candace. Candace says, quote, no. Just no. And at this, with her saying no, Ponder just pushes even harder on her. Jean says, quote, baby, I love you already. I'll hold you and love you and keep you safe forever. Don't give up on your life before you have it.
I don't like kids, but you have to be a special kind of messed up in the head to do that to a child. For, like, you said you were just reaching around halfway and spent 30 minutes, so like an hour or more.
Yep. An hour, 9 minutes, and 53 seconds.
Jeez. I don't know what would ever drive someone to be that cruel to another person. And just... you have to be sick.
You do, but it's like... it's at this point, like, it's like there isn't, they feel like this is the only thing they can do, which I know that's not, that I'm not taking up with them at all. They are horrible people. They're taking advantage of, like, the help that Candace needs, because Candace needs actual therapy. She doesn't need this bullcrap.
Yeah, that is messed up. Genuinely messed up.
Yeah. And okay, so from
being, like, the entire time, it doesn't even sound like she was being mean or anything. She's genuinely asking, like, do you want me to come out here? Can you give me air? Can you help me? Like, she's trying her best the entire time.
It, like, it's only at this point where, when Candace is like, I'm giving up now. Because, like I said, Ponder was like, scream, Candace, quote, and Candace was just, no. At this point, Candace couldn't care enough to cry. Yeah, it is terrible. Sorry. But we gotta brave through it. Yeah, 32 minutes, 25 seconds to 33 minutes and 44 seconds. McDaniel, repositions himself on a pillow on Candace's head. Ponders says, quote, Candace, and there's no response. Ponder takes another pillow from Jean. Ponder says, quote, she needs more pressure over here, so she can't. And then she stutters slightly and says, so she really needs to fight. Watkins says, quote, getting pretty tight in here. Ponder says, quote, yep, less and less air all the time.
Jeez.
35 minutes to 39 seconds. 35 minutes, 39 seconds to 40 minutes. Ponders and McDaniel repositions themselves again. Ponder says, quote, she needs to be stuffed in her own puke and vomit. Watkins says, quote, uh-huh, it's her own life. Quit her. Um, 40 minutes, 1 second, Candace says, quote, no. Which was her last word. McDaniel says, quote, Mama got you this far, now it's up to you. Watkins says, quote, Candace is used to making her new... Candace, quote, sorry, no, quote, Candace is used to making her life everybody else's problem. She's not used to living her own life.
She is a child.
Yeah. And this is the worst line. This is one of the worst lines. Ponders responds with, quote, quitter, 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 quit, 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 quit. She's a quitter. Watkins and Jean leave the room. McDaniels takes Watkins' place until she returns. McDaniels says, quote, this baby doesn't want to live. She's a quitter. Watkins tells McDaniel and St. Clair to take a break. Ponder and Watkins talk about someone who is stressed, their dream homes, and a property that is being remodeled nearby. Then Watkins says, quote, let's talk to the twerp. And they unwrap Candace. And at 1 hour, 9 minutes, and 43 seconds, Watkins says, quote, oh, there she is, sleeping in her vomit.
Oh.
End of transmission. Paramedics arrive on scene to a blue-faced Candace. The therapist says she was left alone for a few minutes, which caused asphyxiation. They're able to bring back a heartbeat. However, she is pronounced brain dead the next day. The four therapists were arrested on May 18th and 19th.
That is.
Yeah, it's just horrible.
By the way, when you'd said, one of the lines you'd said, it was like, she doesn't want it, she's a quitter. Something like that. Scene to that point in the game theory video. I just hadn't remembered it until you said, like, that specific line.
Quitter, 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 quit, 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 she's a quitter.
Yeah, it was like the baby doesn't want to try or something like that. Yeah, that is what reminded me of it. I guess I just like repressed that.
Yeah, but there is kind of a silver lining here. Everyone but Jean, that's the break in the lying, but everyone but Jean were all charged with knowingly or recklessly committing child abuse, resulting in death. All four plead not guilty, stupidly. McDaniel and St. Clair pleaded not guilty, since technically they weren't in the room when Candace was unrolled, and said that they knew Ponder and Watkins for 10 years and had complete trust in them to justify why they participated in the fatal session. A year later, though, they pleaded guilty and received 10 years in prison with probation and 1,000 hours community service in a plea bargain. And, of course, plea bargain and, like, 10 years in prison. Watkins and Ponders were found guilty in court and were sentenced to, you want to guess?
5 years.
Add 11 to that. They got 16 years in prison, which is good, but it's not life.
Yeah, the reason I said five is because I thought they would get off, like, disgustingly easy.
Like most serial killers do?
They should have gotten longer, but, I mean, at least they got 16.
16's good, but I would say, like, 20 to life would be better.
Yeah. Or, or someone just comes up and shoots them in the back of the head.
It's just like, all of a sudden, like, Candace's actual father comes in, and he's, like, part of the mafia now. Because, yeah. I mean, he did have crime.
He did?
He did have crime. No, he did have,
I'm so sad about Theo being totaled. Should I get a Mini Cooper?
Mini Coop? I mean, yeah.
Or a Buick Verano. Volkswagen. Ooh. Eos.
Volkswagens are good.
Yeah.
I want like one of those like 60s Volkswagen buses.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yes. I want to be a hippie and I'm going to have the most cannabis in the world in that van.
Okay, sure. Use Mini Cooper Coupe for sale near me. Jesus, the car market is so high right now.
It always is high.
Yeah, but it's like hitting record highs. Like give me a second.
Give me an A, give me a B, give me a YMCA. I don't know.
So a 2014, which is 7 years ago, not super long ago, is $17,000 with minor damage. It's not giving me what I actually, never mind, it's fine, we're driving. And that is one of the lower price ones.
Wait, 1700?
17,000.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I got my car for 2000.
Yeah, I got mine for like 4,000.
Now, here's, and part of me was kind of like, oh, that's a bummer about this. That's because I'm morbid and I'm like obsessed with this case. In court, they used the video of the session against them. They put a gag order on the tape, which is why all I could find is a transcript instead of being like, hey, let's do a reaction video.
Yeah.
Thumbnail Pogger's face. Anyway.
Thumbnail Pogger's face. That's a one-way ticket straight to hell considering the case you're talking about.
Alright, guys. So, guess what? Here's this crazy true crime case that you will never believe what happened. I can't believe I just did that. Anyway.
I think I'm gonna look for Mini Coopers.
So, okay.
I'm sorry.
It was fine. We need like a comedic come down right now.
Just imagine having no contact. Are you gonna like cut out the when Theo got totaled?
I don't know.
Cause it's so, it would be hilarious to just be listening. It's like, yeah, put out a gag order so we can't actually react to the actual crime. And I'm like, I think I'm gonna get Mini Cooper.
I don't know. By the way, cause she said, B said Theo. Theo was her old car.
Yeah. I think 2010 to 2012 Mini Cooper, that kind of has, that's not going to be aerodynamic.
No, if you want aerodynamic, go like a 70s sports car. 70s sports car was like Starsky and Hutch's like red sports.
Yeah, I love the body styles of the 70s.
Yes. And the car styles too.
I am so sad. Oh my god, what? I just caught that. Ooh, what if I do like a Fiat 500? I just want a VW. Why are they so hard to find now? It's like everyone else snatched them up right after I got Theo. So now they're just so hard to find. What if I get a 500? What if I get a Fiat 500? Wait, never mind. Apparently, they are unreliable. Never mind.
They are unreliable. So, I bet you'll be shocked to find out Connell Watkins and Julie Ponders had no license to practice therapy.
Wow. That is unbelievable.
And not surprising, seeing as in 1990, a 13-year-old also died under their care from an aspirin overdose, but they ruled it as a suicide.
I hate people. Okay.
Yeah. Jean was charged with child abuse resulting in death, which gave a 4 to 10 year sentence if proven guilty. She surrendered to this charge in May 24th and was given a 4-year suspended sentence, which she requested to be expunged from her record after the sentence was carried out, seeing as she wanted to be a pediatric nurse. And this was granted. So, if you know who she is, if you've seen her around in your nearest doctor's office,
be careful.
Be careful. She might, you know, cover you with a sheet. Or pay for it, too.
And kill you dead.
Yes.
God, I can't imagine doing that to a child.
like, we can't imagine it because we weren't in that situation. I'm not taking up for her, but it's like she thought this was the only thing you could do.
That she has to grow a brain cell or two, because if she was on a nursing track, okay, she had a rudimentary, at least I'm gonna give her the benefit of a doubt and say she had a basic, super simple, rudimentary understanding of people. Because if the way she acted, I'm not gonna give her anything but above rudimentary. I cannot believe that. So she saw this child crying, saying that she couldn't breathe, that she couldn't move, that she saw him throw up on herself and poop on herself, and she didn't go, maybe this isn't good. Like, you don't have to be a nurse to know that. You just gotta be a normal person that has existed on the planet for more than a day.
I forgot about that. She was a nurse.
Yeah.
She knows what asphyxiation looks like, right? Mm-hmm.
She should have. I just...
I forgot that now I don't like her anymore.
Okay, so did I ruin your last shred of hope you had for her? Good.
I was like, but she paid for it. She was in like that kind of mom situation where it's like, I don't know what to do anymore. Help any way you can. This is what my child needs. This will make everything all better. It's like, no, you watched her die.
Yeah. She's not stupid. She obviously got through schooling for nursing. And she couldn't step up and be like, hey, no, this is wrong. Shame on her.
Now, let's talk about Candace's blood family for a second. In late September of that year, Angie, Candace's birth mother, was finally contacted. She was heartbroken because, you see, Angie had been hoping that Candace would come back to her someday. She was furious with social services and at Jean. She asked questions that haunted investigators. Quote, like, wait. Quote, Jean was a licensed nurse. How could she trust an unlicensed therapist? These aren't quotes. These are what she asked, basically. How could the adults not know that smothering a child would kill her? And how could they just ignore her pleas for air?
Yeah.
Answer? The therapist actually told Jean that these pleas were to manipulate her into saving Candace.
Bro.
And to make it worse, because of this, all evidence of Candace Tiara Elmore was erased from the foster system. She was never born. No evidence of her except for a death certificate in Colorado for Candace Elizabeth Newmaker.
Wow.
Watkins was paroled in 2008 after serving 7 years of her 16-year sentence, with restrictions on contact with kids and the inability to participate in any type of counseling work. But this incident caused the Candace Law in Colorado and North Carolina, which outlaws rebirthing and any type of restrictive/restraining therapy.
Yeah. Sucks that a child literally had to die before they did that.
And I'll leave with this. Angie told the SS, before they took Candace, that taking her into the system would kill her. She never knew just how right she was.
Unspeakable levels of cruelty all around. The fact that she had to find out later and her fear about her child was realized, that is
I'm sorry that we have to kind of wrap it up really quickly because I do need to get ready for work, but
yeah.
That has been Disturbed with me, Justin Peters, and my guest, who I'm hoping can be a co-host at least a more recurring guest, because just me laughing at myself in my room is pretty depressing. So,
oh, I would oppose, because as disturbing as this was, it was. Hey, name drop again. It was also really cool, and I don't feel like I'm just watching a random video getting told true crime stuff. It is my friend. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And hey, maybe we can start doing it a more like researching like every week or something, doing this anytime we can, and maybe next recording we both have a bigger time frame, and B, we both have stories we can tell. Who knows? Awesome.
I would not be opposed to that at all.
And the website that I went to for my sources, which it didn't include the transcript, but you can find the website with the transcript on it. My main source was a website known as namnab.com, spelled out. That's how it's spelled. Namnab, no punctuation, no nothing, just namnab.com, which stood for Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman, which was a true crime site. Yeah.
Let's go.
So. I'm gonna go get ready for work.
Be safe. Don't crash or anything.
I'll try. All right. Well, I guess that's the sign off.
That was horrendous to hear. Thank you for telling me.
No problem. I love ruining people's days.
It's so good, and I hope everyone that listened enjoyed it.
Yes.
But yeah.
I hope everyone did too.
But have a good day. Hopefully your shift isn't too bad. And fare thee well.
Fare thee well. Sayonara.
Sayonara.